don't quit your day job. Well, how are you? Did you get through New Year's? So how many of you stayed up till 9? Then, you know, I look back over the year. I mean, I was a youth pastor for a while until I got to hate teenagers, and then I changed. But can you not hear me?
No.
Pull the mic closer.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh.
You gotta swallow it now.
Now, is that all right? Can you hear me? Yeah, my voice has changed. I used to be quite loud, and I know with my son, when I'd talk to him, he'd start to cry. My wife said, "Stop yelling at him." I'm not yelling. Okay, so everybody's okay now?
Yes.
How many need hearing aids? Oh, they're stupid things. Well, anyway, when I look back on the days when I was a youth pastor and do all-nighters, I mean, we'd go right through to about 6, 7 in the morning. Oh, how stupid. You know, and as you get older, you realize, I can't do that anymore. Well, today I want to talk to you about teamwork. And I got thinking about it when I watched a little bit of the WNBA. That's women's basketball, by for those of you who don't know. And we all know that the whole Caitlin Clark thing, this young woman came out of Iowa State, a phenomenal, phenomenal basketball player, very nice person. And she came in and she got drafted into the pros, and they all hated her. And the reason was because she was so good. And also because she was white. I'm not trying to be racial here, but that's what they're saying, is that because she's a white girl who can play basketball better than the black girls. And they punish her. I mean, they try to thump her out. The refs don't even blow whistles. So the whole thing's in turmoil, and they're all saying that they're gonna lose millions and millions of dollars by the way they treat her. You know, there are a lot of teams like that. There are a lot of places like that. You know what? There's a lot of churches like that too. In fact, when we do communion, we'll be basing it out of Corinthians, where Paul chastises the Christians there, who were all the rich ones. You know, had their for their, you know, bring and share. You know, that they would have the caterer come, and they would sit in one part of the, you know, church, I guess, and eat. And the other, you know, poor people had to sit over here with their little sandwiches. And it wasn't really a bring and share. It was kind of a bring and watch us have a feast. And Paul got after them for that. So even in churches, we have this issue. So I want to talk to you about that. Now, as I get into it, this is not a chastisement. This is an encouragement. Because you're a great church. I want to tell you right now, before you start feeling sorry for yourselves, okay? You're great people. I mean, I've been here 8 years. But no, so you don't have to applaud. We're going to take a special offering when this is over. But we came because you're great people. I mean, when we were in Burlington, and I was working for the regional office, we went to a church, very nice, well-known church within our group, and a friend of mine was one of the executive pastors, and so we went, and we went in, and as we walked in, you know, we just went in casually, and one guy says, hi, Bobby, and that was about it, and we went and sat down, kind of three-quarters of the way down, sat there, and nobody came to say hi to us. And then Bobby and his friends showed up behind us. And when the service was over, we just sat there for a little bit just to see what would happen. It's kind of a test. And Bobby and his friends said boo all to us. They just left. Mind you, there were Timbits and coffee, you know, outside. But we went, nobody said boo. I saw the pastoral staff, and there's a number of them over in the corner here talking. And then went out, the guy who had been preaching, who I didn't really understand what he was trying to get at, and a few others didn't either. One guy actually yelled it out, what are you trying to say? But when we're there, we're just, he comes running through the door, hi folks, and right by us. So a little later, my friend, who's the executive pastor of this church, says, Paul, how'd it go? I said, well, I may need a little more time to, no, you don't. I said, okay, I'm not going back. He said, oh no, we're trying to get these people to be friendly. And I told another friend who used to go to the church as well, and he said, they've been trying to do that for 10 years. So, you know, now I say that because when we came here, you were very welcoming. We felt very much at home. And for a Baptist boy in enemy territory, you know, trying to begin. Now, do you know why we came? You don't, do you? Okay. If you want to blame anybody, blame Glenna. It's your fault, that woman right back there. Get that smile off your face, woman. When we were buying our house, the guy we were buying from played pickleball. Guess where? Yeah, right. And I guess he knew Dave, and Glenna somehow got in on it. And she just, so he told her, well, this guy's a Baptist, retired Baptist minister coming. You know, so she goes, oh. You know, the next thing I know, here we are. And we've been happy here. So you okay with that? Okay. So what I'm going to preach on is more of encouragement than it is admission or chastising. Okay. I just want you to know that right now. Okay. This is a good sermon. Worthy of your praise. All right. You know, there are a lot of different, in the Bible, a lot of different groups. I mean, you know, we have as an example David and his mighty men. Now David, he had three groups actually. He had the three, they're called the three. Now these guys were incredible fighters, incredible warriors. One guy actually killed 300 enemy in one day. Man, I couldn't get up and even look at the enemy that much. You know, I mean, this is the big three. Now, these guys had muscles rippling off all over their bodies, I guess. I would show you, but my wife said I can't take my shirt off in church, so we'll have to just leave that to your imagination. But then there was the 30. There was the 30. And then after the 30, there were the rest of the troops. Now, what brought these guys together in harmony? Well, you know, what was the key? The key was, number one, they loved David, and they wanted to make him king. Okay, that's, you know, that's just incredible. I mean, we can go into the New Testament and Jesus and his disciples. Again, you had 11, and you know, these guys sort of worked together, worked with you. You know, there was no infighting there. There was no pushing around or anything else. But Jesus also had a bit of a breakdown. He had Peter, James, and John, and then there were a couple of other ones. You know, like Andrew and a few others. You know, who you'd hear about. But the majority seemed to be the quiet guys. And be, you know, and yet there was no competition. Why is that? Well, because Jesus was Lord and they loved him. In Matthew's gospel, Jesus gave a wonderful illustration. There's a lovely little story. It was about a rich guy, and he was going to go away. I guess he was going to go south for the winter or something. You know, like other rich guys we know. And so he went to his three servants. and he gave them each bags of gold. The one guy, he gave 5 bags of gold. The second guy, he gave him 2 bags of gold. And the third guy, he gave him 1 bag of gold. Now, Jesus was careful to explain to us the man wasn't playing favorites, but he gave to each man according to his ability. That is, he knew the guy getting the 5 could handle it. The guy getting the 2 could handle it. The guy getting the 1 could handle it. And so he gave it to them, and he went away. And when he came back, of course, Jesus tells us that the guy who did 5, he doubles the money. And he's praised, and you know, by the manager. The second guy comes, and he's doubled his money. And he's praised, and you know, he's rewarded. The third guy, he comes along, he says, "Oh, well, you know, everybody knows how tough you are, and well, you know, you've harvested crops you never planted, and well, you just one mean, you know, you're never thoughtful or nothing, and so I just buried your gold in the ground, and here it is." And the guy says, "Well, if you thought I was that bad, why didn't you just invest my money, and that makes some interest?" And of course, the man was punished. Now, when we see those things and hear these things, we realize that as a church, we have those same responsibilities. We have to learn to work together. You have to learn to understand what is your ability. What gifts have God given to you to use? And God gives them to you because he knows you can use them, and he'll help you use them. I mean, you know, I'm a pastor, and you know, there are days in my younger days, when I was in school, you know, I had these, you know, these big dreams of, you know, pastoring a, you know, church of, you know, half a thousand or something, you know, like that, and, you know, kind of walk into the pulpit and everybody claps, you know. No. But I realized that my gifts did not lie in trying to pastor a large, you know, mega congregation. I couldn't do it. But I'm glad with middle and, you know, lower class, you know, size churches. I don't mind that. And, you know, I think I've done relatively well with that. So you recognize then, what can I do to serve God? You know, well, what can I do to you know, honor him? And that's what I want to talk to you about today. You know, Romans, first of all, tells us in Romans 12:3, God has given me a, but this is from Paul, God has given me a special gift, and that is why I have something to say to each one of you. Don't think that you are better than you are, than you really are. You must see yourself just as you are. Decide what you are by the faith God has given to each one of us. So, you know, don't go thinking you're better than anybody else just because, you know, you have a different position or do a different thing in the church. I mean, well, what they're saying is, okay, it's nice that you're on the worship team, but he says, don't think yourself better than Paul Percy, who can't sing and lick. Now, I learned that early. Remember how they used to pump the services into the nursery? Do you guys remember that?
I do.
Well, my church, the nursery wrote a petition for me to be shut off. So, you know, we understand who we are and how we are. Now, this one servant, though, he represents to me what a lot of Christians are feeling like. You know, I'm just what? Well, I'm just a teacher, or I'm just on this group, or I'm just. Years ago, I was preaching in Bancroft at a new church that had started under my ministry. And the special music was a group from actually the first church I actually pastored in Havelock, I love them so dearly, and we had a great time with them, and the music was fabulous. I heard them before, and the sweetheart who is leading the group and playing the piano, you know, she says, "Oh, we're just from a small little church in Havelock." I was not happy. You didn't hear me?
No, I didn't hear what you said.
Well, I am speaking. I have this on, but do we have an issue?
Just that one bit. I didn't hear what you said.
Okay, I'll say it again then. This might be a long service. As she was playing, is that okay? Okay, listen to me now. She said, we're just a small church from Havelock. And I didn't like that, because I know what that church did. I mean, that church had a men's group that was larger than any of the service clubs in the town. We drew from all the other churches to our church for the youth program. We had over 100 kids. You know, I opened up three or four sessions of town council in prayer. I was even chaplain for the Legion. I was dry. So all I'm saying is that really bugged me, and I told her after, don't you ever, ever say that again. You never, never say, "Oh, I'm just a..." You never say that. And that's what we want to talk about today. And Paul helps us, because when he writes to the Colossian Christians, as he finishes up his letter in chapter 4, and this is very common for Paul. He would talk about different people in the church. And let me go over some of the people he talked about. And then I want to finish up by talking about us. First of all was Tychicus, verse 7. Tychicus came from Rome, from probably a province in Asia somewhere. And Paul said three things about him. He said he was a blood brother, he's a faithful minister, and he's a fellow servant. And he was often used to deliver letters. When Paul had to send a letter to Thessalonica or send a letter, to Philippi, it was Tychicus, Big Ty, we used to call him back then, and he would take the letter and away he'd go. Now, you just don't catch a private plane or even a commercial, because they didn't have airplanes back then, all right? They could take a boat, or they walked, or if they could find a horse somewhere, maybe a horse. But it was a long journey, and he's the guy that used to do that. He's the guy who was a real team player. He seemed to show a real loyalty to Paul, and he was a man that Paul could count on. You know, what do you want me to do attitude? I've had those guys of people in my church. Oh, they're a real blessing. A real blessing. The next two we mentioned was Onesimus. Now Onesimus, he was a runaway slave, and he came to know the Lord, and Paul wrote a nice little letter for him to take back to his master, who's also a believer, trying to make sure he didn't get punished too much. And the other one was Mark. Now Mark, started with Paul, and on his first missionary journey, and partway through, he got homesick and went home. That happened. Not everybody can kind of be away from home for a long period of time. You know that. I mean, some of your kids, they'll send you a text from Hawaii or something. How are you doing? Merry Christmas. Others, they're still in the stupid bedroom they were raised in. They won't leave because we're all different. We're all different. I was in grade 1, I went to boarding school, no problem, I was working at age 2 and 3. So, the thing is, Mark got homesick, and so he went home. Then Barnabas wanted to bring him back on the second journey, and they had a, remember Barnabas and Mark, Barnabas and Paul had a big fight over Mark, and so they split up. Well, now all of a sudden, Mark is sending a letter to Timothy, and he says, bring Mark with you because he is helpful to me. That's a big change, you know. So here are these two guys, these two young men, you know, very new, very fresh, and Paul is just, you know, Paul is saying, hey, bring those guys to me. The next person was Aristarchus. He came from Thessalonica. Now, I love this guy because he was involved in the riot at Ephesus in Acts 19. Have you ever read that story? Oh, it's cool. You remember when all the riots were going on? I preached my first sermon, I'm serious, my first sermon in front of 500 people on the riot at Ephesus. I think the second time I preached it didn't go over as well, but this one, I had a mother was just blown away by the fact that her 14-year-old took notes. I was blown away by someone taking notes too, really. But the thing is, that this is Aristarchus. He's not afraid of competition, you know. They think he may have even made himself Paul's slave so he could travel with them to Rome, you know, when he had to go there. But nobody, you know, there was no question whose side he was on. You know, if there's going to be a fight, you know, Aristarchus was there. And he probably had a few little tats or something just to scare people a little bit. But that was him. He loved Paul. He loved Jesus, but he loved Paul, and he was loyal to him. Another one was called Justus, verse 11, or Jesus would be the name, but Justus. And he was a Jewish believer. Not much is said about him, but he seemed to be the kind of guy who was the encourager. You know, who was good at comforting people, good at just building up your hopes. And, you know, I've had those people in my church too. I love those guys and women actually. You know, they're just incredible. Epaphras was the other one. He was a prayer warrior. Epaphras was from Colossia. He knew the people and wanted God's best for them, and he praised God to make them strong and perfect. Was what Paul said. You know, I love, you know, there are some people who are prayer warriors. Not everybody is a prayer warrior. You know, I wish I was. I'm really not. But I've had some great prayer warriors. The reason is because if they say something, I know it's going to happen. You know, years ago, we bought our first house. And we didn't have any money for a down payment. And the house had gone for about, now this is going back now. You know, about $210,000 or something like that, and which was a lot of money back then. And it was now for sale. They had a few offers turned down because it was a power of sale, which means the guy had gone bankrupt, and you're dealing with financial committees who have no love, and all they want is money, not, you know, they don't care about the house. And so anyway, we were praying about it, and well, we were able to come up with a down payment. Even my bank manager is still trying to figure that one out. And the church was praying, you know, and we wanted to get the house for $130,000. No, $135,000. We started at $130,000 to show we're flexible. And so they had turned down other ones in the 180s. And so we said 130, they came back. You know, I think it's something like 150 or high 40s or something. And I said no, 135. That's what we prayed for. And this, my prayer warrior says, hey, you'll get it for 135. Okay. And then they came down to 137. And I think, oh, what's a couple of grand to God? You know what I mean? You know. And my wife said no. We said 135. So I listened to her. as I've always listened to my wife, and so surprisingly they came down and took it for $135,000, and they were just blown away by that. And so when we were signing the final papers in my office at the church, the selling agent who was there, she's sitting there, she says, "Can you tell me something, please?" I said, "Sure." She says, "What did you do?" I says, "What do you mean? Did nothing." She said, "Number one, you're dealing with a financial committee. They don't care about your feelings. They don't care about sentiment. They have to sell this house and they want to get as much for it, you know, as they possibly can." They had two offers given to them at about $180,000 and $187,000, and they turned them down. Great. So then she says to me, "Can you pray for a couple of other listings I'm having trouble with?" And I said, "Not unless you're willing to pay, share your money with me." You know. In fact, when we bought my house here, I shared that. And we were going to pray just before we left the house and decided we were going to buy it. And my agent, she wanted to get in on the prayer. I started flipping through a bunch of other pages, you know, like this. All I'm saying is the prayer warrior are great. If you're a prayer warrior, man, you know what? You have a wonderful gift. You have a wonderful, wonderful gift. Well, then, of course, there's Luke. We know all but Dr. Luke. And what, you know, he was like, sadly, there was Demas. Now, Demas, at this point, was doing fine. You know, he's a fellow worker, and Demas speech and so on. But later on, of course, he had to, you know, when he wrote to Timothy, he said, "Demas has left us for the, you know, because he left the world." That's sad. Well, let me tell you something. When someone like that leaves, it hurts. They say, "Well, don't take it personally." I do take it personally. What happened? What went wrong? What did we do? And I have been through that myself, you know, with some individuals. And then, of course, this final one, and this is the one that's important. Archippus, verse 17. Paul wants his readers to be to Archippus what these individuals listed were to him. And he says, "Help Archippus, you know, tell Archippus to be sure to do the work the Lord gave you." You see, this guy was probably the head elder or the pastor of the church. He says, "You tell your pastor to be sure to do the work the Lord gave you." You see, everything they did with that church in Colossae, everything they did serving the Lord was also to make sure that their pastor, their leader, did what God wanted him to do. And that's the question for us today. This is a question. You know, what role do you play in our pastor's life? What role do you play in our pastor's life? You see, we all think, well, if we're not on the worship team, or, you know, or I'm not on the board, then I guess I'm just out. And we can tend to slack off sometimes, because I'm just out. But that's not true at all. I mean, do you know how important you are? Yeah. Let me give you a little some help. I may name names that they have not paid me to say them. Well, what was that? Where'd that come from?
You've been pushing it all this time.
But where did it come from? All right, who did it? It's okay. No, it's all right. I'm a Baptist. I'm used to water. It didn't break, though, eh? Oh, man. I didn't even see it. I asked for this from my buddy Mark, and I... Oh, all right, let's move on. But let's stop and look at ourselves, can we? Just for a short time. Now, let's start... let's do Mondays and Saturdays. Okay, Mondays and Saturdays, we have the... we have the store, right? But how many lay people volunteer to work in the store? I didn't ask for hands. Guy at the very back. But you know what? I mean, how many of you do? I mean, and then there's the cafeteria, right? You go in there and you get a hot dog or a sandwich and soup and a few other things, huh? And you can sit and talk and pick up all the gossip at once. That's great. That's serving the Lord. And then, well, if it's nice out, like, you know, you go outside and. Are you cutting the lawn now, Don?
No, it's too much snow.
No. How can we be so blessed with two comedians, huh? You know, this is being seen by the pastor. You're in deep trouble now. But you cut the lawn, don't you, in the season? You have been, yeah. You know, and Penny, is Penny here today? No? Well, Penny, she's out there doing the... Where's Penny? Oh. Stop hiding. No, Penny. No, she's trying to hide behind Ronnie here. No, she's out there doing the weeds and stuff. Have you seen that? I try not to look. But that's important. That's important. And then, of course, if you come in on Sundays, you've got, you know, those working with the kids. You know, the dear workers who never hear a sermon, you know, 10 years. And, you know, and they're working hard. And then the greeters.
Oh, I'm just a greeter.
No, you're not. You're a greeter. You know? I mean, we're here because someone, you know, did the greeting thing outside of church, which we've forgiven. But you greet when people come in. And I usually come in through the side because I got my buddy Roy, or Ronnie, but Roy's usually at the side door, and I won't come in if he's not there. My wife did, she says, oh, you have to preach, I don't care. But see, that's important to have people like that at the front and at the back who are willing to greet people as they come in. Get to know their names. If they're new, guide them so they end up coming down the hall, not to the thrift store. You know, it's nice to know where you're going in a new church. That's important. You don't say, oh, I'm just a greeter. No, yeah, oh, no. That's a word you don't use. That's like swearing. Because you do help in that way. And then, of course, you know, there's Tristan in the office, of course, and there's the worship team on Sundays, the ushers, you know, that all plays a role in our pastor being able to do the things that God wants him to do. It's an important role. And then there's Big Mark here. Mark is over there. Wave at me, Mark. Thank you. You know, Mark, you know, you're going to go to hang, you're going to have your soup or your coffee. You know, he gets that ready for you. You know, I said, okay, can I get a drink of water? And he brings it right here to me, takes the lid off and everything, puts a glass down there to test me. You know? All I'm saying to you is every one of you has a role to play in helping our pastor be the pastor God wants him to be. I mean that sincerely. I mean, I pastored for 47 years. I can tell you right now that there are people who I just look at who are just a blessing in the different roles that they played in helping me be the kind of pastor God wants me to be. So don't put yourself down. I don't care what you do. And listen, age brings differences in your life. I'm learning that now. My voice is not as loud as it once was. You know, I'm hobbling around. I've always hobbled around, so we'll let that one go. But, you know, we change. Age changes us. Live with it. Well, there's only one other thing you can do if you're not going to live with it. We don't want to go there today. But, you know, all I'm saying is you sometimes have to change your role. You have to change your role. And, you can switch to something else that you're able to do, even if it's just praying for your church and your pastor.